If there's a person out there who can relate to either of the scenarios that you and I are describing, what would you encourage them to do first? What was your step one? As you spent those next 6 months contemplating, where should I go next? What did you start to explore?
What I was really trying to tap into, and what I'd encourage anyone to tap into, is what energizes you. Everything's either inspiring you or expiring you, right? If it's adding energy to your life, it's inspiring you. That means you should lean into it. You should go for it. You should do more of it. If it's expiring you, that means you're tolerating it. It's draining you. It's not serving you.
Let's link up with Krista on The Fix. She's a wellness coach with a focus on mental well-being and physical strength.
What is up, Fix listeners? Welcome to our latest episode of the Fix Podcast, episode 102. I'm your host, Krista Huber, and so happy you're here joining us for another podcast episode. Have yet another amazing guest lined up for everybody today. And this is one of those conversations you might want to listen to twice. I have been so lucky over the course of the past 2+ years podcasting to be able to be introduced, connect with, and really just have that one-on-one time with zero distractions with so many amazing people. And this conversation was no different. I was joined by self-development coach Brian Ford, who has quite an amazing podcast that I encourage everybody to check out. It's called Self-Improvement Daily, and you'll hear him talk about it throughout this conversation. It's got something like over 17 million downloads, and he's been at it for 5 years. And I loved the fact that he mentioned that and talked about how being in it for the long haul and really figuring out who you are as a person and what you want to do is just so foundational to what your life will look like. But I'm going to let him get into all of that and not steal his thunder. So this conversation was one that really explores identity, but in particular, the importance of identity when it comes to shaping habits and developing habits that actually stick. So if you are a longtime listener of this podcast and you're here for your usual fitness and nutrition, motivation, information, learning more of the science, all of those insights, this is one that will really support you in figuring out maybe why you've stopped yourself from getting to where you want to go, and kind of ask you to peel back some of those layers and look inside and look at who you are as a person, but who you really, really desire to be. And Ryan also reminds you how to get very clear on that. We talked about the fact that a lot of people kind of skip the step of figuring out what they want out of life. So hopefully this is an episode and a chat that maybe kind of probes you to think about that. I would encourage you to take pause when you're listening to this conversation, maybe like literally pause it while you're at it as we start to get into that part of the episode, and ask yourself, have I taken the time? Am I creating the space in my life to be able to really think about what I want? Because Brian and I both agreed that not enough people do that. And if that's somewhere that you feel stuck, if that's somewhere where you feel like I don't really know how to map that out, he has amazing resources. He's got a 21-day challenge that he offers, and even just listening to his podcast, you'll get some good tips and tricks. They're only 3 minutes, which is great. So nice and digestible and bite-sized for you to be able to start exploring that for yourself. So again, if any of this resonates with you, like we always ask you, please share it with somebody. We hope that it's one that you'll enjoy. And with that, let's kick it over to Brian Ford for today's episode. Brian, welcome to the Fix Podcast. So happy to have you on today. And as I mentioned pre-recording, we're going to kick it off with the icebreaker question for the Fix Podcast. And that is, what's your go-to coffee order? What are you sipping on in the morning?
What I'm sipping on in the morning is water with Element electrolytes.
Oh, no coffee guy.
I love hydration salt. I'm not a coffee guy. I try and be energized just based on what I have on the calendar for the day. There's a larger conversation around kind of potentially not wanting to be dependent on caffeine and kind of maintaining independence of my own energy levels. But yeah, I'm a water guy. Stay hydrated.
Have you always been like this? I got to know the backstory. We can make this longer than an icebreaker question.
Okay. Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, just to go really deep, really quick, I guess, so my background, I guess this kind of goes into a little bit about me. So I grew up in Newport Beach, which is a very affluent area of the world. I didn't realize it was that when I was living in it, right? You kind of live in a bubble and it's very familiar. And then I went to college and I left that bubble and I found that there was a whole world outside of it that I was not prepared for and that I could not relate with. So that was kind of my blast into the world. And in this kind of what I call almost like an entitled, secluded, safe bubble, you know, I was having everything kind of answered for me. Any problems I had, my brother, my mom, someone would fix it for me. I didn't necessarily build a sense of independence for myself. I was dependent on the other people. It's like, oh, honey, you know, I'll fix it. It's okay. So I like almost grew up in this environment where I was being coddled and I was being cared for. And I didn't know any differently. It's not my fault, but that's kind of what I grew up to be. And what's interesting is that on the back end of that, having done a lot of self-development work and understanding my own beliefs and how this history has influenced who I am, I've come to realize that I've actually gone on the opposite side of the spectrum in that since I was so dependent when I was a kid, I now try to be as independent as possible as an adult to overcome for insecurities and to overcompensate for, you know, some of the core beliefs that I have that I'm not necessarily proud of. So that's a big, large way of answering the question of, you know, why not caffeine? It's because I have this independence that I want to maintain that I feel like caffeine at some subconscious level, it disrupts my ability to take care of myself. So I combat with it in that way. And yeah, that's just, it's been a choice, I guess, that was unconscious for a while. And now it's become conscious after some of the self-development work, but, that's a larger explanation around no caffeine.
Very interesting. Did you ever try it at any point? Like, did you have to go through the process of giving it up or it was like never a part of your routine?
Yeah. So it was never part of my routine. Okay. I never really wanted to give it a try because I had this story in my mind of the dependency and I see people who are addicted to caffeine require it. Mm-hmm. But that was all my beliefs just being projected on others. And that's something I actually want to get better at. And since I've been doing a lot of the personal development work, I'm more open to exploring things that could benefit me that I wouldn't consider previously. So I'm getting better at challenging some of those beliefs and trying things like supplements, like caffeine, like, you know, just other modalities that that threaten the previous identity and the previous beliefs that I had, but may support me and may serve me in ways that I wasn't allowing into my life previously. So it's a new process now, a rediscovery of how some of these things could add value in the right extents, right? Practicing temperance with all these things so that it serves me to the fullest.
Yeah, that's a really interesting perspective. I never thought about it like that. And like you said, to go deep right away, I wouldn't have thought about the tie to choosing to have coffee or not have it relate to the story that you're telling yourself. But that's very true. You've obviously hinted at already that you do work inside of the self-development space. And I obviously want to share a little bit more about your coaching business and your background and what you're doing and all of the, you know, self-discovery. It sounds like I think there's a lot of people who within the first couple of minutes of tuning into this might say to themselves, I don't even have remotely near the self-awareness that Brian does that they could tie a decision to have something like coffee that seems like a really small part of your routine, right? Like very, some people just go through the motions. They have it, they don't, whatever, right? But I think there's a lot of people who might sit back and be like, I've never even taken the time to think about myself that way or think about the decisions that I'm making on a regular basis and really understand why I'm wired the way that I am. And I love that sort of stuff. I think it's fascinating. So we're definitely going to get into that. And if you want to kind of expand on what you've already said, I'd love to know beyond the work that you do, more specifically identifying with who you are as an individual, why should the Fix listeners care about what you have to say throughout the rest of this episode?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like people should listen because I am you and my experience and perspective is equally relatable as your own experience and perspective. And we're better together when we understand that. So, I mean, to explain how I'm you, I guess is, like I said, I kind of grew up in this background, this neighborhood, this upbringing that was positive and supportive and it's good. And I'm very proud of it and happy for it. And I'm grateful for it. But it obviously presents its own sort of challenges. Mm-hmm. So when I did leave my bubble and I had this bubble popping moment, you know, I kind of realized that the world was different and, you know, I had a lot of resources and support and coaches and tutors and stuff to, you know, be set up for success. And a lot of that was applied in the new environment, which was college. I ended up playing college soccer at UC Davis. So I was a D1 student athlete and I was a team captain. I was a scholar athlete of the year and I was continuing to excel. I was doing a lot of great things. And, you know, I was on the fast track. A lot of people were like, oh man, I can't wait to see what you're capable of. And all I really wanted to do was make a difference in my life. You know, I was also raised, while I was affluent, in a very generous background. And I just, philanthropy was instilled in my heart and my being from a very early age. And I just wanted to make a difference. So, you know, I kind of have the fast track, the accolades, the resume to be able to do something big. And I go out and I join the workforce and I fail and I fail hard. And I'm no longer the guy. I'm no longer the stud. I'm no longer the one. I'm just another person that is underperforming and doesn't know what to do with it. And that's really when I reached into personal development. You know, I realized, if this is my rock bottom, I know it's, you know, everyone has their own version, but if my identity crisis here of, okay, who am I? I'm not as good as I thought I was. You know, what do I do about this? That's when I chose to turn to personal development, read some books, The Compound Effect being one of my Darren Hardy, really kind of articulated some of the things that I'd always known to be true about life, which is basically consistency is key. You know, we could do small things consistently, creates disproportionate positive results. So that was really impactful for me to hear. But more than anything, I just started exposing myself to more perspective, more people, more ideas. I started testing, implementing things, build out some core foundations that allowed me to accelerate my growth so that I could reverse engineer becoming the person I wanted to be. You know, it was in that moment of the identity crisis that I was able to redefine who I became. And it's, you know, that process, that pursuit of becoming my best self, and I'm still pursuing it, of course, every single day, is no different than yours or anyone who's listening, right? It's a commonality. And like you said, I've been able to think about this a lot and gain a lot of self-awareness around this. So hopefully people can take some of the insights I've gathered to be able to apply it into their own lives so that they can gain more self-awareness and make decisions that best serve themselves.
So I want to go back to what you mentioned about your transition from college into the workforce and you mentioning a point of failure. What did that failure, if you're willing to talk about it in more detail, what did that failure look like to you? Was it like a lack of expectations of what you had in your mind that post-grad life would look like? Was it being unhappy in your career that you had chosen for yourself at like 22 when we have no idea who we are? What did that actually look like in your story?
Yeah. You know, I've always identified as a high performer and a high achiever, and I was no longer reaching that elite level of performance, that award-winning performance that I was used to. But not only that, I was actually doing more harm than good in certain extents. So to tell a story around it. So my first job out of college, I was a medical device sales rep. So I was working in spinal surgery and I was selling implants to spine surgeons. So these are orthopedic and neurosurgeons. And I'm coming into their office, I'm knocking on their door, I'm showing them a little implant. I'm saying, hey doc, you should use this. And like, why should I listen to you? I've been treating patients longer than you've been alive. Are you serious? And I heard that. It's like, because the new technology and I'll have great service and please work with me, right? Mm-hmm. Like desperate. And it wouldn't work, right? Because I didn't have the credibility yet. But I, you know, had to find my own ways to knock on the door and get in and everything. But this also meant, because this is a career position, you know, it also meant that I was the low guy on the totem pole for the other people that have more established careers. And there was one instance that happened, another story, but you know, someone was kicked out of a hospital in a hospital nearby me. So I was low guy on the totem pole to go in and service that account. So I'm going in and I'm dealing with one of the most notoriously difficult surgeons to work with. I don't know his preferences. He just wants to be mad at me and mean to me the whole time. And I just got to wear it because it's my job. I'm the guy for the job. I'm, you know, I'm just raised my hand and here I am. And it got to a point where there was one procedure in particular that I didn't have a lot of experience with. It was a lateral, which means you're going through the side to, you know, implant inner body spacer in the spine. And it's a very complex but minimally invasive procedure. And I'd seen a couple of them, I'd run a couple of them, but I wasn't super confident. I was preparing as much as I could, but I just knew something was going to go wrong, right? I just knew, like, I had the feelings like this guy, he wants something to go wrong. Like he's manifesting it to go wrong. I'm the one that he's going to just like be able to push this all off on. I couldn't sleep the night before. I just knew something was going to happen. So then we get into the surgery and we're going through the procedure. Everything's going perfectly well. It's all complete except for the final step, where basically you have to like backfill the inner body spacer with some bone graft to be able to like support fusion, just kind of like the science behind it. So he's malleting some of this bone in, and it's a, it was a biologic that I'd never used before. And he's kind of malleting it in. I'm like, okay, like this is the end of the procedure. He does this all the time without me. Like I figured that he knew what he was doing. I'd never seen it happen before, but I was like, he wouldn't be doing something and not ask me if it wasn't the right thing to do. Long story short, he was malleting on the inner body spacer. It went past the spine into the opposite side of the body. So now the patient has this horrible outcome of the procedure.
Oh my gosh.
First thing he does is he takes an x-ray, and you see the inner body spacer is in the side of the patient's body. And he looks at me and says, "What the F happened?" And I'm like, how can we retrieve it? Here's the tool. Let's do it. And he's like, "No, that's not retrievable." Anyway, so what we had to do is, after kind of a long screaming at and me failing very miserably, we had to actually go into the opposite side of the body, make an incision, remove it, because it was a done procedure. Like, we couldn't continue on with that side of it.
Yeah.
And then we had to do an alternative procedure to achieve the surgical goal. So everything worked out okay for the patient. They don't know much different other than two minor incisions that were unnecessary. But here I am, all I want to do is make a difference in the world. I'm here, the low guy on the totem pole. I'm trying to be a good employee, showing up for this. And then now I'm harming this patient because I didn't have the confidence to speak up. I didn't feel like I was prepared for this procedure. And, that's kind of where I hit this moment of like, man, I used to be the guy and now I'm just not. And that was like a real moment for me, a real like reflective low of, damn, okay, like, now what? Like, who are you? What's happening? What's going on? This is not the life I chose. This is not the life I want. I'm not enjoying this job. What's next? So yeah, that's kind of the story around how I failed miserably. And, it came at the expense of someone's health and well-being, fortunately, not so significantly, but nonetheless, it was a wake-up call for me. And that's kind of when I started pursuing other career paths.
Yeah, that's scary. What if you could take us back to the moment, like when you were in that procedure? At what point, like how definitive were you in that exact couple of hours, right? Did you say to yourself, hey, this isn't for me? Or did it take a few days later? Like how definitive were you about recognizing like, this is not what I see for myself?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously immediately as it's happening, it's all about the task at hand, saying, yeah, okay, how do we make this situation as positive as possible? That's not to say that my heart sunk and my face flushed and I like lost like semi-consciousness, like it was a big deal, but it's like, okay, cool. Focus up. Like here's the task at hand. What's the job at hand? It wasn't until that night when I was showering and I was staying at this hotel casino in Reno, because that's the account that I was covering. I was in Reno at this hotel casino showering in a cigarette smelling hotel room. And I'm like, really? Like, is this really my life right now? Like, I'm away from my girlfriend. I'm failing at this job. And that's kind of it happened the evening of, where I was like, this just isn't something I'm enjoying. And it's not like I had my clear path forward from that point, mm-hmm, but it became like the seed that was planted of, okay, I need to do something new. And what does that look like? And I think I worked for the company for maybe another 6 months or so before moving on to my next position, which was great. And I enjoyed it.
So as you just said, it can take a moment like that to just be a domino effect to start to examine other things, right? But for various reasons, a lot of people will continue to stay stuck, tell themselves stories that this is what they have to do for whatever reason they can come up with, usually logical ones, right? But, in thinking about the fact that you didn't necessarily know what your next step was going to be, for somebody out there who might feel that confusion, and I've been in that exact space, like I just knew in other roles that I had, like this is not what I picture for my life. Sitting behind a desk like this is not what I picture for my life. I'm not sure what it is, but I was willing to try lots of different things. So if there's a person out there who can relate to either of the scenarios that you and I are describing, what would you encourage them to do first? What was your step one as you spent those next 6 months contemplating where should I go next? What did you start to explore? Whether that was externally, internally, a combination of the two.
Sure. Yeah. I didn't have the words to describe it at the time, but I do now. What I was really trying to tap into, and what I'd encourage anyone to tap into, is what energizes you, right? So one of the philosophies that I share on the podcast is everything's either inspiring you or expiring you, right? If it's adding energy to your life, it's inspiring you. That means you should lean into it. You should go for it. You should do more of it. If it's expiring you, that means you're tolerating it. It's draining you. It's not serving you, right? So just being able to tap into your energetic intuition of what is serving you, what is inspiring you, what is energizing you. So I kind of looked at the landscape in front of me of like, okay, cool. So this is what I got. These are my options. I can go and do the traditional job path and I can try and hire a recruiter and find a job. And, so it's like, let's think about how does that feel? Okay, that's an option. Do I feel energized by it? Not necessarily. oh, my buddy's got this startup and it's super risky and it's in the sports recovery technology space. And like, I would love to be a part of that. Man, like, would he even pay me to work with him? Like, what does that look like? Let me ask, let me see if there's a spot for me, right? That's what energized me. So I knew kind of like what were the cards in front of me, and kind of evaluating my intuitive knowing around kind of how that would change my life. And then I took the first step. It wasn't, hey, this is the job that I'm committing to. It's, hey, let me send him a text and just like check in and see how things are going to start the conversation. And that's something that, I mean, there's a huge lesson around that, that my podcast, Self-Improvement Daily, really emphasizes, which is imperfect action. It's all about just doing something small. Don't put pressure on it. Don't even make sure that it's right. Just do something, because as you get closer to a goal or an outcome or a vision or a dream or whatever it is, it will get clearer as you near it. You don't need to know the exact perfect trajectory to get started. You need to know the general coordinates, and then you'll be able to make adjustments and pivots along the way. I actually heard a philosophy today on a mastermind that I was in, which is about life balance. And when you think of balance, there's nothing still about balance. Like, balance is active, it's dynamic. You're constantly making adjustments to be able to balance, whether that be standing or handstanding is a great example. It's like, you're always moving your legs, moving your arms, you're making adjustments to be able to maintain balance. So it's a similar kind of balance play. It's a similar practice when we need to figure out how we pursue our goals, how we take our next steps forward. And it's the action that you take that allows you to make those micro adjustments to slowly navigate toward that end destination. So I took a small, ambitious, bold action, which was to text my buddy to say, hey, how's it going? I'm kind of looking like we kind of talked about this at one point. Remember that conversation at like that we had lunch one time? Like, what do you think now? Where are things at? How's it going? And then, I transitioned to working with him, and that startup later got acquired and is a huge part of my career. And, you know, the rest is history, but it wouldn't have happened had I not at least opened the door to seeing if it was possible.
That's so cool. And you really have me thinking about the balance comment, because, you know, in the nutrition space in particular, when it comes to trying to market programs, sell them, whatever, everybody is trying to promote this concept of finding balance in your nutrition and your fitness. And finding balance inside of the Fitness Fix program, when we talk to our clients about it, we're really saying to them, hey, like, we need to assess the choices that you're making on a regular basis right now today. Are you okay with continuing to make them potentially for the rest of your life? Whether that's choosing certain foods, choosing to track those foods, choosing to go to the gym, choosing to not go to the gym, choosing to go for a walk, choosing to not go for a walk, drinking a certain amount of water, the list goes on and on and on, right? But that leads into the whole cliche of like, oh, you got to trust the process. You actually just have to do the process, right? Yeah. Like, and in that sense, that's where the balance will ultimately come in. And if you hate it the entire time, it will never be balanced for you, because you'll constantly be thinking that something's off balance, that there's something else that you should be doing. And I see a lot of times, so many of the women we work with in particular, like, they're really fixated on trying to be perfect in so many aspects of their lives that they cannot wrap their heads around this idea of taking the messy action, right? Of saying to themselves, if we're talking about like the minutia of food, let's say somebody's going out to eat. If they're really new to logging their food, they're so quick to be like, oh, well, I'm just not going to track it because I don't know how to do it. It's not going to be the same as if I prepared it at home. And then we kind of flip it back on them among our coaching staff. And we're like, well, what if you just picked an entry that looked like kind of sort of similar? Is it perfect? No. But do we know if you maybe had like 600 calories versus 1,000, or like 400 versus 350? The 400 versus 350 really doesn't matter. But for me to know what your food preferences are when you're going out to eat, that's huge, because that could influence every other next step. Or more importantly, in the context of this, it could influence the plan that we can put together for you that is truly going to represent balance in your life.
Yeah. It reminds me of the two meanings, and this is like probably a lifetime question that I'm going to continue asking myself, the two meanings of the word enough, right? If something is enough in one lens, that means it's sufficient. It's enough in the sense that you're satisfied, but then there's also enough as in you're tolerating it, right? Like, it's just enough. Like, it meets the minimum requirements. And so this idea of what is good enough when it comes to tracking your meals, when it comes to taking this messy action, when it comes to reaching your goals, right? Like, what is enough? It's a very tricky concept. So
very tricky, because I could even play devil's advocate and say, to your point of there being two definitions, sometimes what I just described isn't enough when you're the person who's doing that 5 days a week, right? Because then we talk about consistency and we talk about that repetition, and it's like, well, if 5 days a week, we're just kind of sort of eyeballing this and kind of sort of estimating it, and a client turns around and is like, well, I'm really unhappy with where I want to go, I then have to step in as the coach and say, hey, have you thought about the fact that maybe we need to do a little bit more in this scenario? So that is, that totally applies. That is very, very true.
Yeah. No, reflection is it, right? Like, you need to have awareness and consciousness around these things. And I think that's a lot of things that people miss when it comes to their improvement. So call it nutrition, call it exercise, call it mindfulness, call it relationships, productivity, anything, right? In order for you to know if anything improved, you need to have a clear record of how things were and how things are. And it's the delta between those two things is the indicator of change. And if it's a positive change, that's improvement. If it's a negative change, then that is a decrease, or it's, you know, the opposite of improvement. I don't even know the word because I only talk about improvement. But like, the idea of like being able to pursue your change in a systematic way is something that a lot of people overlook. Data is your friend, right? A subjective experience is going to be biased by your unconscious mind, by your history, by the old scripts and patterns you tell yourself. It's just a rational story that ends up being reproduced over and over again, right? So it's being able to like have a clear, self-aware, unbiased lens that you can see your own behavior through. That's exactly what I help people with when they install their self-improvement operating system through the 21-day challenge that I offer. But it's just a pivotal piece that a lot of people overlook in their improvement, no matter what form it takes. That I'm glad that you're servicing that for people, because it is the single greatest thing that you can do to improve fast.
I see a book back there on your bookshelf that is a fan favorite of mine, and one that I encourage every single client that we work with at The Fitness Fix to read, and that's Atomic Habits. Like, I can't even read the title, but I know that book enough to know that it's right there on your bookshelf, and I figured it was probably integral and maybe even something you continue to look at along your journey. So I'd love to know your take on that book.
Yeah. No, I mean, Atomic Habits is central to a lot of my philosophies. The one thing that, a lot of people love the tactics, and the tactics are great in Atomic Habits, which is lower the barrier to entry, you know, make it more obvious, make it more difficult, you know, all the different kind of four parts of the habit loop. But the one thing that's underlying all of that, that really produces sustainable behavior change and habit formation, which is in the book, but it's the kind of more of an underspoken part of it, is the idea of identity-based habits. So if you want something to be done consistently and executed consistently, it needs to live within your identity. All your identity is it's your belief system, your values. It's the way that you believe yourself and exist in the world. Okay. But here's like the secret sauce. And this is something that I call the identity behavior feedback loop, which is like a super critical process that talks a lot about some of the previous conversation too, with evaluating your performance over time. So the identity behavior feedback loop is a subconscious loop that actually allows you to transform your identity. It's not enough just to say, oh, I want to be this person. Mm-hmm. I want to be healthier. I want to, you know, prioritize my key relationships more. I want to get into this new job, right? Like, we can logically try and assert a new reality in our lives, but it will feel ingenuine or inauthentic until you actually prove it to be true. And that's where the identity behavior feedback loop is the mechanism to actually shifting your identity and your beliefs in a systematic way. So the way it works, to go through it quickly. So your identity, like I said, is the, you know, person that you believe yourself to be. Your behavior, so identity behavior feedback loop, your behavior, the activities that you engage in, the things that you do throughout the day. So your behavior is influenced by your identity, meaning whatever identity that you hold subconsciously, you will unconsciously engage in certain behaviors, right? If you feel like you have weight issues, if you believe that your core, then you're going to take actions unconsciously that perpetuate that, that prove that to be true, where you don't track your calories, or you have a cheat day or something like that, right? So it's like you unconsciously do it. And this is an influence that ends up, you know, running your life and running deeper and deeper roots until it becomes so much more difficult to uproot. And that's kind of the opposite side of the feedback loop, is not only does your identity influence your behavior, but your behavior then is the evidence and proof that confirms and reinforces your identity. So if you're in this negative identity behavior loop cycle, you continue to escalate that thought pattern, that activity sequence, until it becomes really ingrained in your psychology. But if we talk about updating our identities, we want new beliefs, we want to relate with the world in new ways, we want to be a new person, what we've got to do is we got to take new action. We got to engage in new conscious behaviors. So instead of unconsciously reflexing and doing a certain thing that then reinforces a previous identity, why don't we choose to engage in a new activity that's representative of who we want to be, that's empowering, that's supportive, that's productive, that's aligned with who we want to be? We get consistent doing that. Because every time that you take consistent action, what you're doing is you're communicating something to your identity. So if you do something negative within your behavior, you're reinforcing an old negative identity. If you do something positive within your behavior, you're reinforcing a new positive identity. So that's why consistency is key. If you want to literally change the way that you relate with your health, with your diet, with your exercise, with your hydration, whatever it might be, what you need to do is take consistent, conscious, positive action until you provide overwhelming evidence that that must be who you are. Because every single time that you take that action, it's another vote. This is something James Clear talks about in Atomic Habits. It's a vote for the person you want to be. And you do it enough times. It's a vote. It's a vote. It's a vote. It's a vote. It's a vote every single time. Then you're actually actively cultivating a new positive conscious identity. So that's like the big unlock to like sustainable behavior change, is you need to shift your identity. If you don't shift your identity, you're going to continue unconsciously doing the things that keep you where you're at. But the way to shift your identity is actually rooted in conscious behavior and action taking, which is why that kind of connects to earlier in the conversation about just do it, just do something that's new, because a whole world opens up when you do. Now, the extra elaboration to this, which is probably a topic that a lot of people love hearing about because it's the single greatest limiting factor in our lives, is self-sabotage. I don't know if you've heard of self-sabotage before, but self-sabotage lives in the identity behavior feedback loop process itself too. So all self-sabotage is you preventing yourself from taking new positive action. Why does that happen? Because your old identity, your subconscious mind, is comfortable and familiar with the way that things are. So if you take a new action and you're reinforcing a new identity, that threatens the way that you currently see the world. It threatens the old identity. What this does is it creates cognitive dissonance, if you're familiar with that term. Your subconscious mind expects you to do a certain thing, but then your behavior does something else. It's a tension and anxiety that your mind desperately wants to reconcile. One of the ways that it does that is it actively prevents you from doing new behaviors. So self-sabotage takes many forms. It's procrastination, it's negative self-talk, it's limiting beliefs, it's fear and anxiety and emotional thinking, it's irrational thinking, it's overgeneralizing. It's perfectionism. It's all these different things that keep you from taking new action. It's the rational story that your mind tells itself to keep you from taking some form of action, because that new action threatens your identity. One thing, like the unlock, the ability to be able to overcome self-sabotage, is first an awareness on what are the forms that your self-sabotage is taking. Are you afraid of this thing? Do you have limiting beliefs around this thing? Are you anxious in these environments, right? You get to kind of tap into that, understand that there is this subconscious influence that's shaping your current reality. Then in order to overcome the self-sabotage, you need to take action despite the fear, despite the anxiety, because every time you do take action, even though it feels uncomfortable, you end up reinforcing the new identity you're intentionally trying to cultivate until you do it enough times and you start to tilt the scales in terms of which identity is true, the old one that's disempowering or the new one that you're intentionally cultivating. And that's when things officially become a habit, right? It becomes a habit when you have this identity-based routine around you preferring to do things in certain ways. So, you know, self-sabotage is the thing that keeps us from being consistent. It's the thing that keeps us from taking action. It's our subconscious mind's way of saying, slow down, I don't like this, this is dangerous, this is threatening. But we know that that doesn't serve us, especially if these stories and histories and beliefs run really deep and we inherited them in ways that we did not choose. We can rewrite those. We can create new identities. And the keystone to that is taking new, novel, intentional action. So anyway, I went off on a little bit of a tangent there, but that's a huge central component to the way that I approach my personal development and the way that I coach and teach people about how to change their lives.
That was great. That's so well aligned. Just this, to back up prior to what you were sharing about self-sabotage, in this idea of that identity component of this, that is so aligned with what we do inside of the Fitness Fix, because something we share with clients all of the time is You have to already believe that you're the person who lost the weight. You cannot walk around saying that you're the person who didn't, because to your point, you need to show up as the person who has kept the weight off, right? Like the things you do to get to that point where you lose 20 pounds, 30 pounds, X percent body fat, fit into a certain dress size, feel confident in a bathing suit, whatever that goal might take shape as. Once we get there, the things that got us there can't just go away, right? So if we, yes, I mentioned everything about like appreciating the process and understanding the importance of the process, but it's also recognizing that that has to be who you literally are wired as. It can't just be something that you're separated from and saying like, oh, these are just the actions that I have to take for this period of time. And I think the other thing that really trips people up with all of this is everything we're talking about takes time. And it takes repeated failures, and it isn't something that you're gonna do in 90 days or even 6 months, honestly. Like a lot of the tools that I have in my toolkit that I share with clients have been in my life for 6 or 7 years. And as I've changed as a person, as different factors and stories and, you know, change relationships, jobs, all these different things have changed in my life, my relationship to these tools have changed, and the way I look at them has totally changed too. But that wasn't something that happened in just like one interaction, even of one single year of working with a coach. It was like 5, 6 years and 7 different people later. And I think a lot of people really struggle with that side of it. Like it's not going to be something that once you get it, you master it. Like there's levels to all of this.
Yeah. And one of the forms of self-sabotage is overthinking. And let's say you start getting some results, or maybe not even you're getting results, but you're taking action, you're being consistent. And then you start thinking to yourself like, oh, it's not working. It's not for me. This isn't right. And like, that is self-sabotage preventing you from taking that new and novel behavior. So it's being able to stay consistent despite that influence that allows you to finally reach that goal that you're looking for. And yeah, you're totally right. It takes a while in order for this process to really root. You know, people say, oh, it's 21 days to form a habit. That's like a very superficial, like, oh, there's not as much resistance around doing this thing. Is it 21 days? True habit formation. I mean, and it's a moving target, but like to actually be in a routine where it's more comfortable for you to do something new than not to do it, which is kind of the gold standard of how we want to build this identity-based habit, is 300 days or 300 instances of something, right? So you're almost a year of doing something consistently until it becomes a part of who you are. But then there's a payoff to that. And this is what you were alluding to, which is kind of the bow on top of this with the kind of identity behavior feedback loop. So let's say you get consistent, you're taking action despite self-sabotage. You keep on, you know, let's call it logging your meals. Every single time you're reinforcing the new identity of like, yes, I am intentional about my diet and my weight. And I am the type of person that, you know, you're proving to this. I am the type of person that, you know, belongs in that dress, whatever it is, right? You're proving it to yourself through your action. Until that identity becomes the true identity, the one at 300 days where you're operating from that energy instead of the previous one, then what happens is you embody that energy and then unconsciously you start doing things that are in alignment with that new identity. So it's no longer so difficult to take that novel action, that thing against self-sabotage. It becomes a natural byproduct of who you are, which then further amplifies this identity behavior feedback loop because you do it unconsciously. It reinforces the old identity, which then encourages you to do it again unconsciously. And it's back and forth. Instead of spiraling into negative feedback loops and negative habits, you're now amplifying and accelerating positive feedback loops and habits, right? So that's how your identity shift ends up being the gold standard of sustainable behavior change. It's because it then causes you to unconsciously do the things you always dreamed you'd do. But you've earned that. You've built it over the course of intentional action for 300 plus days, years, whatever it ends up being, in order to actually lock in that shift. But what you're describing, which is embodying that identity beforehand, that helps to be able to accelerate that identity being ingrained, because when you take a certain action, you're providing evidence for something. And the more defined and clear you are on the identity that you want to have, that you're like choosing to embody, the way you're hoping to relate with it, that ends up being stronger evidence, more pointed evidence, more potent evidence every single time you do it, so that it fills the right identity. You're intentional about the new identity that you're building up. So that energy, because that's a conscious energy, that's a conscious belief, that's a conscious part of it. You want that identity to then float to become unconscious over time. But it needs to start with that conscious commitment and the evidence to prove that conscious commitment to then to elevate it to it being subconscious. So it's very technical, but you're spot on in the way that you're approaching it.
So how, from your perspective, your experience, your coaching, let's say you had someone that is really telling themselves this story that they're stuck, they're frustrated. A line I get often is from someone who's like, oh, I've been doing this for X amount of months. I've been doing this for a year and I'm still stuck. I'm frustrated. How would you advise them? What do you think like the missing piece of the puzzle is for this person? I will tell you one thing I see all the time is that the person's perception of what they've been doing is not quite enough, to go back to what we were saying earlier. It's sometimes they're doing it, not quite all of the time, not as much as it truly takes to get there. And along the way, they were okay with making some of those decisions because I would always ask them, oh, you know, like the consequence here is just the time that we are going to arrive to that goal. Are you okay with this taking a little bit longer? Yes, cool. Then maybe we can make a different decision about having alcohol or a certain food choice or whatever it is. But then they get to a point where they're like, but I've really been at this for like 7 months, a year, and I'm just totally stuck, or even 3 months in some cases. So what's going on with that person, and where should they direct their energy to?
Yeah, no, I think that's it's a golden question, because a lot of people kind of feel that frustration at the end of like, I'm doing all of the right things. And it's almost kind of like you hit a plateau. So I think one of the things that you can think about differently, and this is probably already in your program, but maybe it's a different way to do it, is having clarity on performance, right? We talk about you can't improve what you don't measure. So when you hit that plateau, how do you start gaining insights into the things that cause you to lose the performance that you're hoping for? So let's say that you have dessert in these settings, you drink alcohol in these settings. Starting to actually be able to pinpoint the causes around those, to be self-aware and conscious of when these deviations happen, then allows you to have that information to pursue that same opportunity the next time. So it's not so much about, I mean, there is of course a subconscious and belief-based element of it, but a lot of this is your logical reasoning and your clarity around how you want to show up in the world. And the more evidence that you can see and point at to say, hey, I'm improving at this, I'm growing, I'm making progress, the more that you can see that there's energy and momentum around it, the more it's going to facilitate the rest of the process. And sometimes all that means is, you know, let's say you do have dessert, you know, in a week, three times, when your goal is maybe once, you know, and I track all these things for myself, right? So this is just something that applies for everyone. My goal is two times a week, but anyway, that's different. But so let's say that I had dessert three times in a week. And then I look back every single night when I reflect on my behavior. I'm like, okay, what caused me? Okay, well, I was at this party and it was a birthday party. I had one piece of cake, but I didn't have two pieces of cake. So I'm happy with that. Okay, cool. That makes sense. That's a condition where I feel like it's a good fit. Then on Wednesday, it's like, oh, I was watching Ted Lasso. Love that show. I was watching Ted Lasso. And you know, my fiance had ice cream and I had ice cream with her and I really didn't need it then. Okay, cool. Now I've noted a condition where I felt like I was out of alignment. And that decision in particular then causes that old belief to be amplified. Whereas if you're making intentional choices and you're seeing the logic and the reasoning around the things that you're doing that may appear to negatively impact your goal, but they're actually part of the life that you want to live, then you're no longer reinforcing an old identity. You're just finding the context and the infrastructure around who you want to be and how you want this to exist moving forward. So it's being able to figure out the moments where those lapses happen, the consistency in that, so that you have confidence to say, you know what, this isn't going to happen again because I called it out. I know what it looks like. I'm going to be better next time. And it's not so much even a matter of being more self-disciplined, just being more clear on what's actually important for you and what's not, so that you can slowly navigate and iterate your way forward in finding the right balance of things that that support you in your goals. So that's one of the things, is just more awareness around those things. And then even like earlier in the process, the other thing that I'd recommend, and I've said the word clarity a few times, like if you want to be your best self, you want to change your life, there are three things that are required. It's very simple. First is you got to define who you want to be. Okay. So you're like, okay, I want to be this person. I want to choose to believe this. I like want this to be part of my life. So it's like a lot of people don't even take the time to like clearly define that. That's part of the identity that gets to be the seed that your behavior gets to flow into and prove correct. Right. So there's that first piece. Then very simple, you start doing the things that are in alignment with you being that person, and you just reverse engineer what, you know, someone who's like this, you know, someone who I admire in their health, what are the health behaviors that they engage in? Oh, they exercise every day. They track their food. They this, they that. Cool. I can start doing those things too. So you can gain inspiration and source some of these behaviors from people that you admire. You start doing those things that prove that new identity, that new person that you've defined to be true. Then the third step is you stop doing the things that prove that thing to be false. So those unconscious behaviors that you were engaging in, if you stop doing those things, then you're no longer reinforcing the old identity. And the way that you do that, you make the unconscious conscious by literally thinking about it, by reflecting on it. So something that I've mentioned, but like my behavior tracking system, I call is your self-improvement scorecard. I help people implement this in the 21-day challenge. So the self-improvement scorecard is a night routine, a keystone habit, where you reflect on the key behaviors that you had throughout the day. And if there are any deviations in your performance or things that deserve some kind of elaboration, you make a comment to say, why did this happen? What can I learn from this? So it flips failure to an opportunity to learn and gain self-awareness around your environment, your context, and everything like that. So that's where you can use this tool or some form of reflection on a daily basis to say, oh, those things that were previously unconscious, let me call them out. Let me see if they happen today, because I know what they are, but I didn't notice them in the moment. But maybe I can notice them now so I can be more aware of the next time they happen in the moment, right? So that's a three-step process to changing your life. You want to cultivate a new intentional belief, got to define the belief, got to do things that are in alignment with the belief, and you got to stop doing the things that are out of alignment with the belief. And it's so simple, but that's the point, is it always comes back to your action. What are the behaviors that you're doing or aren't doing that then help you to become that person that you hope to be, that you've defined that you want to be? So those are kind of like the short-term and long-term views of how you can use reflection and self-awareness and these kind of evidences of your behavior over time that give you the insights you need to continue navigating forward toward the best version of yourself.
Why do you think so many people skip over the step of actually figuring out who they want to be? Is it that we distract ourselves with other things? We convince ourselves we don't have time? What, in your experience of working with people, what do you think is the roadblock there?
I think there are a few things. I don't know if there's any one thing. I think one is fear. I think the main one is fear, that if they commit to being a certain person and then they don't follow through on it, they don't have the self-discipline to do it, they don't have the know-how or the execution around it, then it completely shatters their self-esteem and sense of self-worth by saying, this is important to me and I can't do it. What's wrong with me? So people don't even want to expose themselves to that threat and they don't try in the first place. So I think that's one of the first things, is the fear of success or the fear of failure, right? It's like the fear of, okay, I'm like trying to be this. It's like the acknowledgement of like, this is something that I care about. And I think that's something that's so true that, I mean, there's like a whole culture around like, oh, I don't care, you know? And it's like, it's whatever. Like all that is it's a mask to say like, I don't want to feel a threat. I don't want to feel like my sense of self and my character is being challenged. So I don't put myself vulnerably in a place where I can fail. You know, so I think that's one of the things, that's unconscious, is people unconsciously don't allow themselves to paint their dream, because what if they don't live up to it? And what does that mean about them if they don't? But here we are on, you know, having a conversation right now, admiring anyone who has the courage to do that. And even if they do fail, it's like, good for you. Like, good for you for trying. And like, and it's not over. Like, that just wasn't the right version. So it's like, logically, as a third party, you can look at that fear and call it irrational. But when you're experiencing it for yourself, it's consuming. And it's also unconscious, right? So I think that's one of the first things, is fear. And then the second is, people don't know what they want also. You know, it's like, oh, and you probably do a lot of work with this people too. It's like, tons. Oh yeah, I just want to be healthier. I just know I want to be healthier. And it's like, okay, but what does that mean for you?
Right.
Like you, not what someone else told you should think. Like, what does that mean for you? And it's hard. Like, it is hard to figure out what you want. So people might do a version of it that isn't authentic. It isn't motivating, right? Talk about why power. Like, you have a strong sense of why. Like, that's got to be like deep. That's got to be in you, right? So I think those are two of the factors. There's probably more, but those are the first two that came to mind.
As we're coming up on the end of our time here, and we're definitely going to have you back on the podcast, because I feel like there are so many other things that we can unpack even further. But I want to tie this back to your story personally and your career path and your trajectory. So, you know, put yourself back at that point where you made that transition for that other job, right? You reached out to your friend. Then I'm sure you started to ask yourself what you wanted, who you wanted to be. What then led you to get to where you are right now today? What did that look like?
Yeah. I mean, again, I don't think I had the words to describe it at the time, but I do now. I think about my core values, And it's like, the more you can live into the core values that you have, which is kind of like your soul's imprint and how you're meant to exist in the world, like the goodness, the uniqueness that you have to offer, the more that you can live in alignment with those and intentionally around those, the more things will just like happen around you. It's crazy. You know, it's coincidence. You know, coincidence doesn't have any kind of magic or luck involved. For things to coincide, it means that they happen at the same time. It's like, so coincidences occur when you're in alignment, you know, and when you're, yeah, when you're pursuing your core values. So for me, some of my core values are, the word possibility is my number one core value. When I see something on the horizon, I'm like, oh wow, that would be so cool. Or is this even possible? Like, I'm at my best and I'm most excited and enthusiastic when I'm like trying to chase something down. And I just really genuinely enjoy that. And so looking back at it, like when I took the risk to move into the startup role, and which later led to an acquisition and has kind of like been a good foundation for the rest of my career, I was so energized by it. And I was like, wait, what if we actually were the 1% of startups that made it? And what if we were like redefining a technological category in sports, which we did with complete electric cold and heat therapy? Like we've transformed sports. And it's like, whoa, what if? And it's like the possibility and the idea of that pulled me forward to even try it, right? You know, so that's kind of one of the things that like is part of my story is, you know, it's the same thing where it's like, what energizes you? Like what is your calling? What is your path? What do you feel like you're meant to be doing? And it's kind of listening to that a little bit more, even if you can't label it. It's like, it's more of a feeling than a knowing. So it's feeling into that a little bit. So that's been part of the career path there. And then it's also just seeing the things that evolve around you. And this is a much larger conversation about kind of manifestation and quantum physics and stuff like that, that we can go into another time. But it's like, the possibilities that are around you are endless. There is an infinite amount of possibilities. The ones that you take action on then determine your path. So it's having the courage to first acknowledge the awareness of these different things and then to start going down those paths. Anytime you have an idea, that could shape your life path in a certain way. And if you pursue it, then it will. So the more that you trust those nudges, those little downloads that you have, those little, you know, bumps of intuition, where you're like, oh, what if I tried this? Or what if I did this thing? Or is it possible for me to do that? One of my mentors, John Asraf, said, the universe wouldn't be so cruel to give you a dream that you couldn't accomplish. So it's like, imagine if the possibility in front of you, each one of those was a little breadcrumb that was taking you to that end goal. If only were to start to step up to it and pick it up and then do the next one and step up to it and pick it up. Like there's so many different paths to it. And each one of the possibilities is a path forward. If you have the courage to see what's on the other side. So yeah, I'd say a lot of that.
That's really powerful. And in thinking about that, taking yourself back to the person that was in that hotel in Reno and saying to themselves, like, this is not for me. What would you say to that version of yourself today?
Wow. Yeah, I would say that it's all part of the process. Like that, like failure is feedback. You know, when you fail and you feel a certain way about it, then you learn about yourself and it helps to direct you should you make a correction in a different direction. So the pain is an indicator. The failure is feedback. So instead of being upset and depressed and insecure and lacking self-confidence, questioning my worth and all the things that happened in that hotel room, I'd give him a hug, you know, 22-year-old, 23-year-old me, give him a hug. And I'd say, you were supposed to experience this and you won't understand until later why, but you're supposed to. And it's through that awareness I was able to get in the feedback and the pain that I was able to get the inspiration to reroute my life and to pursue new things that I feel much more fulfilled by.
Amazing. Well, in the short hour that we've been together, I feel more inspired. So we need more Brian Ford in our lives. Tell us where we can find you if anybody wants to connect with you. You've mentioned your podcast. We'll link all of this down in the show notes, your Instagram, all that good stuff. Plug yourself.
Cool. Yeah. Well, thank you. I mean, I've enjoyed it. So the podcast is called Self-Improvement Daily. It's different. So it's 3 minutes of personal development insight every single day. Been doing it for over 5 years now.
That's
so
awesome.
I've been at it for a while and it's a testament to consistency. I've earned over 17 million downloads to date. So yeah, things do pay off when you stay consistent. So I'd encourage you to check that out. In particular, if you check out one of the weekend recap episodes that kind of talks about some of the topics from the week, that you just get a little quick, digestible bite of everything. And then cool. at the end, there's a PDF called the 7 Fundamentals to Self-Improvement. So if you're looking to really get on your self-improvement journey, that's a great way to understand how you can do it correctly with the right infrastructure instead of spinning your wheels and doing it the wrong way and having to learn the hard way. So, would encourage you to check that out, but check out the podcast, and would love to see you in the podcast community.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you sharing that about being in the podcasting space for 5 years, because by the time this episode airs, I will just have hit 100 episodes, which is a milestone that I've been looking forward to for a little while. So you were totally, like I said, an inspiration for me personally to continue to do it, because I will say after almost 2.5 years of podcasting, like, I'm just now getting to the point where the community is getting bigger and bigger and getting more of that actual feedback from people and getting messages, getting texts versus, you know, just assuming that somebody's listening to it. You can go look at the data, right? And that's cool. But when you get that actual feedback from somebody you know, and they're like, I absolutely love that podcast episode, they took the time to do that, it's mm-hmm. just amazing to see. And you can really feel the impact that you're having on somebody's life. So for everybody listening out there, if you enjoyed any of this message and you feel like you benefited from it in some way, don't just tell us that information. Go share it with somebody else who can too. Leave a review for the show, because that is one of the ways that both of us can continue to grow inside of the podcasting space. And definitely be sure to go check out Brian's podcast, because I think we need a little more than just this hour that we had together, and we'll definitely have you back on at some point soon. But I love the fact that you do 3 minutes. I think, like, that's, it's bite-sized, it's very digestible, and it just is probably such a great way to either start or end your day. So that's really cool. And that's awesome. So thank you again for being here. I want to acknowledge you for everything you shared, and I appreciate you sharing about your story and your path to how you got here and letting the Fix listeners in on all of that. So to everybody out there, wherever you are listening from, we appreciate all of you guys for joining us and hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Krista.